Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
March 10, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this indeed is the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me. Anyway, it's a Thursday, and we are back to the live O'Chelly Effect. And from this point on, we should be extremely regular. So, you know, what happened? A couple of days off here and there, but trust me, they weren't days off for me. What do we have tonight? Michael Swanson in the first hour, the guy behind WallStreetWindow.com. More than happy to have him along with me always. But WallStreetWindow.com is not just about Wall Street. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. And, you know, Mike has not only been writing a couple of interesting things lately, but reposting some really interesting things lately over at WallStreetWindow.com. Oh, and by the way, he's also an author. The War State, a book I highly recommend. I even talked about it the other day, two podcast appearances I made. I don't know when they're coming out or anything, but I talked about those two podcasts where they asked me about politics and stuff. I highly recommended The War State, and not just because WallStreetWindow.com helps keep us going here, but the idea is I loved that book before before Mike and I ever had a conversation. So anyway, that and Why the Vietnam War, which is the first in a series about the Vietnam War. Two books you should definitely check out from Mike Swanson. He's written some others, you know, the history of Danville, Virginia, some financial stuff. I don't know about the financial stuff, okay? I'm stupid when it comes to that. So I got to tell you, maybe those books are just as useful because the great Mike Swanson wrote them. But anyway, you can check out everything over at WallStreetWindow.com. In the second hour, like I said, J.G. Michael and allegedly, we will have J.G. Michael and Joseph L. Flatley with us, who are the dynamic duo that hosts the Failed State Update. And perhaps I will tell you about yet a third podcast that I did recently as a guest, because those two tortured me for like an hour and a half. And I'm going to tell you about it in the second hour. Okay. But not now, because I got Mike Swanson to talk to. Mike, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm thinking about one of the things I've been thinking about today is on March the 7th, 1973, so we just passed the anniversary of that date, but a TV movie called The $6 Million Man came out. Now, I remember that as a TV show.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that was a TV series. I remember that with...
It was.
Lee Majors was the star, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right. But it started as a TV movie.
Oh.
It wasn't supposed to be a TV show, and it was just such a tremendous hit that a year later it turned into a TV show, and then The $6 Million Woman, I think, came out around 1980.
Oh, yeah, and at one point they had a dog. I mean, Mike, listen.
Oh, yeah.
That was a year before you were born, or a couple of years before you were born. You're a little younger than me, and I was less than a year old in March of 73. So
okay.
It's not like I would remember it, but I do remember the TV series and the dog. Yeah, they literally had the bionic dog, the bionic woman, right? We have the technology. We can rebuild him, right? That was the thing. I remember it. Yeah.
But the thing is, yeah, I mean, people younger, you know, under 30 years old or younger than that, they probably have no idea even what we're talking about. But this was one of the biggest shows of the 1970s.
Oh, it was huge. Right along with Little House on the Prairie and...
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
But the thing about it is the year 1973 was a key year in the 1970s. It's the year that inflation really took off and became a social issue. And the thing about this TV show, I mean, it came out in 1973, so I'm looking back at, you know, at that year as we go through it. But the thing is, $6 million is a lot of money, but
A lot of money right now, but I mean, yeah. $6 million in 73, however, yeah.
Well, today, that translates into $36 million.
Well, at least. Right.
So, well, it's about six times.
About
that's
six, okay.
How much the, you know, what the dollar has depreciated since 1973.
So, let's be now, clear about this. It's 1/6 of the value, right?
Yeah.
That's one way to look at it from a fractional point of view. So, in other words, in order to have $1 back then, you need six today. That's about right?
That's right.
Okay,
that's right.
Just being clear about this all the way around. Okay, go ahead.
So we're now in a moment just in the past month, past 3 weeks.
Yeah, take your time because, you know, we are going to come up on 50 years since that happened because also, what, next month I'm going to turn 50. Actually, less than a month away, I'm going to be 50 years old. Yeah, I believe me, I'm just as shocked as you are that I'm still here. But... yeah, almost 50 years, though. I mean, we'll be entering a time when, we're counting down to the 50th anniversary of the release of that movie. So, and then again, like you said, a pivotal point where inflation is, well, quite frankly, just the state of the state all the way around. I mean, I don't know what you remember about your childhood as far as money goes, but, I mean, I didn't know anybody that wasn't, like, tight because of just the circumstances in the 70s. But anyway, yeah, continue, though.
Well, I mean, now inflation's going up, gas prices are going up, and people are taken aback by it. And I was talking with someone else about in 2008, oil shot up.
Right.
And I was going somewhere, and actually I was playing poker somewhere once a week, and the people got in a panic over the oil price, the gas price shooting up in the summer of 2008.
Right.
And the thing is, though, it didn't last long, and it came right back down.
Well, kind of, because I was in that business, and it gave back, but it never went back to that pre-2008 level where we were only dancing around a dollar and change, like, say, in New Jersey. And it never went all the way back down to that. Like, we never really...
Oh, no, sure.
Yeah, I mean, they never gave it all back. But, yeah, there was a skyrocketing kind of thing there, and the price of oil was up. And the alleged issue at that point in time was the conflict in the Middle East, plus we had the financial crisis here, and we also had the issue of... what was the other thing? Oh, I think that a pipeline went down due to a natural disaster as well. So you had all these things kind of coming together in this storm that caused you to get to, you know, nearly $3 really fast. And then it started to drop again, like in a normal market. When a pressure comes, it would raise the price up temporarily and then it would start to give back. But also in the summer, the price went up anyway, regardless of conditions. So it seemed to be a combination issue in 2008 when I was working in that business. And that was a supply side issue. Now today, I am a little confused by what it is I see, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, today, you know, it's over $100 a barrel. It briefly touched 130.
Right.
And commodities in general are just, they've been going up. You know, we had high inflation last year.
Right.
But this today, the government came out and said that the CPI rate is 7.9% for February. It went up annualized at a new record, 7.9%. Now, the month before, it was like 7, and, you know, it's been going up every month as a record. At least not seen since the 70s.
Right.
And it's not just oil that's gone up. On Monday, a ton of nickel in the futures market Monday morning cost $40,000 a ton.
Mm.
Now, nickel is used in cars, all kinds of things. By the end of that day, the price had gone up to $100,000 a ton, and they halted trading in the futures market. And it hasn't opened back up for nickel since then. It's supposed to open up tomorrow. But that's just one of the things that has run up. The price of wheat, you know, is skyrocketed. Now, I saw someone told me that the price of bread that they like to buy in the grocery store went up 80 cents in the past 2 weeks.
Well,
now,
And that's due to a couple of issues, like you said, with the wheat, but also precious metal prices have gone up, I think, and semi-precious, not just nickel, but copper and other industrial use type metals, right, are all on their way up. I mean, copper is just wiring. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? It's all on its way up, and it's actually moving at a rate that, like I said, I don't fully understand. Of course, when you talk about oil, just like you're talking about the metals here, it winds up affecting other sectors that that need this one way or another for transportation or for direct use. You know, a lot of things are made from petroleum, right? So if there is a pressure on the commodity, then they start projecting a price difference, and you get a risen price point. When you combine that with scarcity due to the, you know, still lingering supply chain issues, right? This all comes together to create something that is like a resonating, like an echo chamber of problems. That and the end result is just the consumer price going up, 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 and that 7.9%. If that's what it really was across the board, that would be one thing. But like your friend said, with the 80 cents on the bread, some things are getting affected at a lot higher rate than just that percentage, right? Or am I misunderstanding something?
Oh, that's what's going on. When they tell you, you know, 7.9% annualized consumer price inflation, sometimes people will say, I don't believe it. It's 30%.
But that's because of what they're buying. I mean,
well, the thing is, If the 7.9% is correct, it also, what is going on is that the price for some goods aren't going up that much. Like, say, a pencil isn't going up that much.
Fair enough.
Or
or maybe it's textiles are not really going up because
textiles or drugs or something, or maybe cocaine's not going up that much.
Well, it could be anything.
I don't know, but.
The price of sugar
going up.
Yeah, okay.
You know, the oil energy's going up. You know, so many things are going up. You know?
Right.
So
literally, some things that you're purchasing could be rising at a 40% rate, which they are, and we know that because they've already done these samples where it's like, yeah, I don't know if you saw the grocery samples where they're saying, look, if you're buying beef, it's gone up this much, and that ain't no 7.9%. If you're buying, you know, certain types of fruits or vegetables, well, those things have gone up, you know, 20% or whatever. And then, like you said, if you get down to pencils or shoelaces or something, maybe those price points haven't changed more than 2%. So by the time they average it out, they say, oh, it's around, you know, 7.9, which you might as well say 8%. And that's not realistic if you're not buying some of those things that didn't rise or maybe even fell, right? And you're only, I mean, who's not going to the grocery store and buying some of these things that have gone up? So you're feeling a greater
pressure.
And
then, you know, this is the United States. What about places that don't have, you know, we're a big country. We grow lots of food, it's a continent we're controlling here. But what about people in Afghanistan?
Oh, yeah.
You know, these people are now heading to the brink of starvation. And, you know, their economy's devastated. We still have the sanctions on them as punishment for defeating us in that war, basically.
Right.
And these people are going to starve. And that sort of thing. In different parts of the country is, you know, it's a the whole world is being disrupted in ways we may have not have seen in our lifetime.
Well, you know, what was
I
funny?
Believe what's going on is bigger. It's going to have a bigger impact than what happened on 9/11.
Yes,
and
sir.
I don't know, you know, when 9/11 happened, I saw it on the television set, and that day people were disturbed by it.
Well, there was not just the people were disturbed, but I mean, look, the financial markets were directly impacted because they had to shut things down in New York for a while, which had a direct impact on Wall Street, and caused all kinds of interesting things. There were weird things that went on there regarding trading and restrictions normally. And there were lifted restrictions in order to get things running again. Big effect there. Now, what's...
Well, there's a lot of weird things going on now.
Yes.
But the people in the market don't even think of it that way.
I know.
It's really one of the craziest things.
It's absolutely bizarre. And I'll tell you something else funny, too. Side note, which I guarantee you a lot of people are not going to believe when I say it, but I assure you it's true. You know, in Ukraine, previous to this most recent incursion, okay, into the country, you know, it's funny, they were doing pretty good against inflation. I literally had a talk with somebody over there, and this is going to sound crazy, Mike, but bear with me. I talked to somebody about it. It would have cost me way less to buy American cigarettes in Ukraine, okay, and have them shipped to me. If you know, I mean, like, I'm talking like half price, right? A lot of things over there were not priced very badly. It was, they were not experiencing the same crunch that we were previous to this. And I don't know how to explain that. There were other European countries like Poland not really experiencing the same sort of crunch from what I could gather. And it's now, with this conflict in place, it seems like everybody's affected. I mean, there is literally no place that isn't affected by this financially. Or am I wrong?
No, you're pretty much correct, but the people in the stock market don't care. They're just buying or trying to buy these same stocks over and over again.
Yeah, they're just doing the same thing. And I don't get it, because why hasn't this fallen off? I mean, is there, what is the disconnect here, Mike, that is not, you know, because everybody goes, look, the stock market's doing well. I mean, I even heard a guy talking about how, you know, Biden has ruined the economy, and saying that, you know, the stock market was doing much better when Trump was in there. And I'm saying to myself, yeah, but how does this make any sense? That, I mean, I get it. Look, the whole thing, our government's totally ruined the economy.
It's not really doing that good. The S&P 500 is down 15%. The NASDAQ is down about 20%.
Yeah, but
it's what the people think. In the market,
but we were getting squeezed. I know, but we were all getting squeezed when the market was humming. I mean, you know, it's not a direct indicator of how the common person is doing. I mean, I know I've said this a million times with you on the show, and I'm sorry, but I mean, look, the market goes up, the market goes down. For the most part, I don't notice it. I mean, not in a realistic day-to-day way, usually. You know, no, this doesn't affect me, generally speaking. I mean, I know in the long term, of course, you know, certain companies, da da da. But honestly, and now, with everybody getting squeezed hard, I don't know, the market is just not behaving like everybody's getting squeezed hard. You know, maybe it's just me. I mean, go ahead, tell me about this.
Well, it's just falling slowly. Mm. That's what's going on. But... it's, you know, it's in a bear market. It's just slow motion.
Yeah.
But that's really what's happening. And bonds are falling in value. The biggest problem, though, is that we have this high inflation and interest rates are zero. So to stop the inflation, they would have to raise the interest rates higher than the rate of inflation. And it's going to take them years to get to that level, because if they were to do it now, the whole government would go bankrupt because of the size of the debt.
Right.
So it's going to take, but I guess call it good, I guess, but one thing inflation does is it reduces the debt. It devalues the debt.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Every year the inflation rate is, let's say, just throw a number out, 10%, the national debt is going to, you know, be diminished. And if you have 10% inflation for 5 years or so, and I'm not saying it's going to be 10% every year, but if you had that, you know, by a decade, the national debt would be cut in half, and then they can raise rates enough to really stop it. So that's what's happened in the 1970s, and that's the similar process that we're now going through. That said, people don't see it that way. People now are being told that the inflation is being caused by the war in Ukraine. Now, there's no doubt it's exasperating it, increasing it, to, you know, but by causing disruptions. And we're in an economic war now with Russia.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, this is a serious situation. It's not, you know, it's just, and I don't, no one, I don't think, really knows or can predict all the ramifications of that. I don't think the experts can predict these things. I mean the experts in the government that got the classified information that no one else can get. Not just in our government, but the Russian government or the Chinese government, all these governments. Because if history shows anything, it's that these guys can't really control the situations they get into, and things end up blowing up on them. You know, they don't make good decisions all the time.
Of course not.
The decision Putin has made, as one example, to invade Russia, I can't really explain it. And see what his plan is to make this turn out to be a big win, let's say, for Russia. And a lot of people in the U.S. media and people, you know, in alternative media too, are saying he must be crazy.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But... You know, I was surprised by the extent of the war he launched. I thought he might just take the two eastern regions and go from there, make some negotiations, create a crisis out of that.
See, but
instead, he's invaded the whole country. But
yeah,
so on one hand, I'm tempted to say he's crazy. On the other hand, though,
see, but I'm not. I'm not.
But I don't know. Does he have a plan that I don't know about?
Well, I look. I
or
as,
is this just yeah. more of the same thing? You know, but Bush invaded Iraq, but
yeah,
he's not insane. I don't. You know, he's not an insane person.
Not at all. I mean, look. There's a certain level of psychopathy, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's insanity. And this is the thing that Larry and I were coming to by analyzing this, right? Where we were saying this is only makes sense if you are seeking to, by blunt force, take Ukraine. And that is the actual purpose here, right? It is to literally reintegrate it into the Russian Federation. I think that is actually just the goal. And I think that he calculated that NATO would not directly intervene. And that he could do it. So he's repeating very much like he did with Georgia, very much like he did with Chechnya, very much like he did, except in those cases, the rest of the international community said nothing just about. In this case, there's a little bit of protest, but I think he calculated that no one would intervene and he could do as he pleased, which was to reclaim Ukraine, which has had, you know, 30 years of independence and has had to struggle with it. And I think there's no insanity here at all. I think very much that it is instructive to understand that a guy like, say, Donald Trump, thinking that it's genius what he did, I believe Donald Trump when he says it. And I believe that people that think like that, where you can make a declaration and go ahead and take something, whether it is land or it is a property or it is, you know, a business deal, whatever, you know, by blunt force, you make a declaration, whether it's part of reality or not, and then you operate based on that declaration. This is a very typical MO for individuals like this, and I think it's not insane at all. I'm not buying any of this, oh, there's something wrong with him. I think this is precisely what he had in mind, and quite frankly, the pre-planned propaganda that has now come out of Russian media is typical, as is the virtue signaling coming from the Western media, where all of a sudden they actually care about people in war-torn areas, even though they didn't care about people in Yemen. I've continuously said they don't care about the people in Palestine, actually. They don't care about the people in a lot of places. Iraq, what's that? Oh, you mean that sovereign nation that was invaded under false pretenses by the U.S. and absolutely balkanized and destroyed? That place? Is that? Do you remember that? Does anybody remember that? I know you do, Mike, but here it is. This is what happens in, sorry to say it, the imperialist mindset, where you have an entitled situation. He believes he's entitled to do what he likes with Ukraine. It is sort of the out-of-control child that he needs to bring home and bring to heel in his mind. I'm not saying it's right, but it's not insane either. So I don't get this. This idea that, you know, is he crazy? Is he? Get out of here with that. He's not crazy at all. He made a calculation. And now even with, oh, what about the nukes and this and that? The tactical nukes, as I discussed with Larry on a show that I don't know if it ever made air anyway. It did make air, but I don't think the podcast is available. You know, we talked about the nuclear assets, and people were freaking out about that for a couple of days until somebody decided to put a stop to it, because the assets he was mobilizing were, well, tactical. So tactical assets being mobilized and being at the ready, you know, is a little unusual. But the idea that the big things, you know, the city killers, the nation killer nukes, things like this, those things are always at the ready. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like much ado about nothing, but yes, indeed, there are, you know, criminal activities happening and all that. And meanwhile, you know, the outrage that's coming from the U.S. and the Western press in general, I think is really disingenuous, considering that civilians are constantly killed in conflicts. There is a horrible situation in Yemen. There's a horrible situation in a lot of places any given day, and they report nothing about it. So I don't know, man. This is a tough thing. So I don't think he's insane at all. I would dispute that. Nothing in his behavior, in my estimation, appears to be insane. Now, does it appear to be blunt force and rather, you know, ham-handed, as opposed to the more sophisticated going in and leveraging a government like he did with Belarus? Yes, it is. But he could not get the result he wanted in Ukraine up to this point. So he threatened and then executed. And I think calculated rather adequately that nobody else that neighbors it would actually do much about it. I think his only miscalculation with dedicating about a tenth of his forces to this, from what I can understand, that's one-tenth of the Russian army, is dedicated to just taking down something the size of Texas. I think he underestimated the resistance he was going to meet. And as far as his propaganda machine is concerned, there on Russian media, to my understanding, and again, I don't speak Russian, but to my understanding, they are presenting themselves as great liberators, Mike. So, you know, he's got a narrative. He's got an MO. He's got, you know, a strategy which is working, although not as well as he wanted it to. But here we stand. I don't see any insanity at all. What say you?
Well, it's more of a question, how big of a miscalculation did he make? You know, in underestimating the response of Europe and the rest of the world.
Fair question.
But that said, it's not, yeah. You know, it's interesting. Some of the countries that have come out against him and have come out for him, frankly. So, for example, Cuba, you know, when they had the vote in the United Nations to denounce the invasion he did, Cuba was against it.
Right.
Nicaragua was against it. And so was Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Which, though, especially the first two, have been, especially Cuba, I mean, Cuba's been tied to Russia for decades. And the United States has been trying to overthrow their government for decades, as right. You well know. And here they are on the side of the U.S. and not Russia. So that's interesting.
Right.
But then India, you know, people make a big deal about China kind of playing both sides, basically. But India did a no vote in Israel, Saudi Arabia, the UAE. They've all basically been more taking the Russian side. You know, Biden, the United States, is trying to get OPEC to pump out some more oil, and they won't even return the phone calls. I mean, these wonderful allies that we
pumped all this money into. Yeah, well, look, there's another thing that I find funny, because people that say, oh, look, they won't return the phone. This is a negotiating tactic, Mike. You don't want to respond
away. What do they want now? What more do they want?
Well, I'm sure they want more, whatever it is they can get. And look, a desperate person on the other side of the table, when you're trying to negotiate, Mike, what do? you let them hang there a minute and see what else they'll offer you, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just saying, this is the way this works. I see none of the, you know, they're like, oh, I can't believe the UAE won't respond to Biden. Really? I can't believe it if they would respond to Biden right away, frankly. I mean, you know, if they did, then they're fools, because they can leverage this situation, probably get some other stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll bring the price down, and here's what you're going to do. You're going to guarantee us, like, some no-profit sales on some weapons, or, you know, the one thing that was said by somebody in the crosstalk here is they wanted a... immunity for MBS because of the Khashoggi thing, maybe. I think that that's a BS point, because, you know, he's never going to have to answer to a U.S. court anyway. Good luck on that. I mean, seriously, Mike, they're going to leverage something out of this that'll be strategically or financially a big help, you know, even if it's on the back end. Okay, fine, we'll open up the spigot now, but what you got to do is come back to us with XYZ. I don't know. It's going to be a thing, though, Mike. It's not going to be cheap. Let's put it that way.
No, not with them. Well, one of the biggest... So, the thing about 9/11 is that, you know, you could tell within days or a week at the most, the United States had been attacked, and it was going to respond by engaging in warfare in the Middle East, to put it that simple.
Right.
Well, we had seen that before.
Right.
In Iraq, you know,
certainly.
When we were teenagers, the first Iraq war happened.
Desert Storm, Desert Shield.
And Bill Clinton had bombed Kosovo, Bosnia. Before the Iraq War,
right.
Bush, the first Bush, he invaded Panama.
The
United States, mm-hmm. in going to wars in other countries, it was nothing new. So when 9/11 happened, it wasn't anything, you didn't really think. I mean, they told us the world is changing, nothing will ever be the same,
right.
and these kind of things, but... That really, I don't think, was true.
Well, look, it was a guarantee that the U.S. was going to go to war somewhere when that happened, okay? That would be the only response that you could expect from the U.S. In that circumstance. That was a guarantee. It was a matter of where. You know, in the initial hours and all that,
right.
Yes, some people said, okay, bin Laden, but not everybody necessarily agreed to that on hours one, two, you know what I mean? And a lot of people were speculating about where this could have come from. There were individuals that thought maybe the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO, right, might have been responsible. I remember that. And Americans' response was, fine, let's go bomb them. You know, as they pointed to whoever, it was like, fine, let's go bomb them. That was the public sentiment, and quite frankly, it seemed to me like our government response was altogether like, well, let's see if we can't, you know, find somebody to strike back against, one way or another. I mean, that was like, you know, a given that was going to happen. I mean, unless I read it wrong, but that's what I saw, Mike.
Oh, for sure. But the thing is that, the point I'm trying to make is that it didn't, you know, the wars in Iraq and all these things happened, which terrible events. It was a disturbing time,
mm-hmm.
the run up to the war. But I think it was the idea that the entire world system is changing and the United States is internally going to change. I think all that was pretty much exaggerated, or the whole situation was hyped up.
Well, let me ask you if that was exaggerated as far as the internal behaviors of the United States, because, again, and I hate to do this, but, I mean, the surveillance state then became greenlit. You know, there was guarantees that there was not only going to be a surveillance state, but plenty of free market surveillance capitalism went right into play, okay? I mean, there was no way that we were going to see anything like the reality before. We literally have a whole other reality internally ever since then, right? Where, you know, the government agencies spying on people became, well, that's just, you know, part of the deal now.
Let me try to make the art what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I just
okay. Let me. What I'm really trying to say is that those changes, like what you just said, are going to the wars in Iraq or the Middle East. Or,
yeah.
You knew we were going to go to war somewhere.
Yep.
And this security state type system, you could see it coming too. I mean, when they, you know, they added security, they talked about security all the time, they hyped everything up, and there was this, and they did create a sense of fear among a lot of people. But you could see these things and where they're going,
right?
What I'm trying to suggest is now this situation with Russia invading Ukraine and mm-hmm. the response to it, I think this situation is much more unpredictable of where this is going to go than what happened after 9/11.
Well, yes, sir. And
could turn out to be more important.
Yes, sir.
Bigger
yes.
consequences.
Which is strange.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
Well, yeah, no, you're right. And what's strange about this is, and look, I'm gonna say something that's probably very controversial, Mike. So, you know, bear with me a second. I feel as though that this narrative is now being turned to hold the American people hostage, and I'll tell you why. When it came to the post 9/11 reality, there were young men and women, but mostly young men, aching, going, signing up because we had been attacked, right? You know, I'm going to go defend my country. There were guys I knew that had served in the first Desert Storm that were like, I don't care. I'm going back over there. I'm going to re-enlist. I'm going to re-up. I mean, this is what they did, my age, right? A lot of young men went too. You know, they wanted to go. Okay, it was all volunteer because there was this collective idea that we had been struck. Now, what's happening today is interesting because it hasn't been stated outright just yet, but I think it's coming that, look, you know what's happening is we're not going to send your sons and daughters into harm's way. And the price for that now is what you're going to pay at the gas pump. It's what you're going to pay in the grocery store. That's the price we're paying. Because remember, that was part of the justification for going after people after 9/11 is, what did they say? And what did even Trump say? And what did they suggest? Some of the government people, well, we're going to be able to go in there and get this fuel. So your fuel price spike, we're going to be able to do that and fix that. It's time to go get, remember it was go get the oil, right? Well, none of that is in play here. So I think the thing is, instead of sending, you know, your sons and daughters in harm's way, we're going to participate in this economic warfare, which, whether you want to accept it or not, even if you're injuring the opponent, you're also injuring yourself.
Now, there's a story, I think it was in today's New York Times,
mm-hmm.
That said... And I don't.
Oh God! I didn't read today's New York Times, so I did. Did I just say something that's in that story?
No. Well, first, before I even say what's in the story, mm-hmm. what you just articulated on—I watched some local news programs where I live, and there's someone that's got a public access like call-in show.
Okay.
And he said we need. He said he's willing to pay more for gas if it will defeat Putin.
Yeah. See.
See, he said exactly what you said. Now, and there's a...
Now, I didn't see this program, Mike, and I haven't seen anybody else articulate it. This is
well,
my
he
equation.
He said it blunt out, what yeah. you just said.
Okay.
And so, in I'm paying attention to the news in three counties, surrounding counties of where I live.
Right.
And one of them, One of the schools has baked special cookies that got the Ukraine flag. Where I live, right. One of the city council people got a power substation to be lit up mm-hmm. with the colors of the Ukraine flag, which is all these little things are indications of how people are trying to use this for their to get maybe they feel really emotional about it and they want to do these things, or they're trying to get in the news or be join this bandwagon, whatever it is.
Well, but, yeah, there's virtue signaling for this whole, and I find that weird too, where it's like, look, take care of the Ukrainian people, support the Ukrainian people. I find that weird. But they're doing it, and even the MSM is like, look, this is terrible. Civilians are going to get killed. There are people that are going to starve. The guy, and by the way, I want to let listeners know that our friend Amir, who has been on the show, a resident of Ukraine, is still in one piece at last report. But he, he's reporting to me that, look, the supply lines are cut off. He is not in a strategically significant area. But whatever they have in their home, that's it. Food and things like that have been disrupted to the point where it's just stopped. And there are other disruptions in their situation, even though they're not directly under attack. I imagine that there's going to be, and I'm sure that some of those reports are true, that people are going to be cut off from resources. And if this goes on too much longer, there's going to be, starvation, lack of water, things like this that are going to come into play. And probably that, look, it tactically, Mike, we must admit, when it comes to war, this is a tactic in order to provoke surrender. So this is going to happen all the way around, even for people that are not picking up guns and going into the streets. Just saying, right? So that is happening, and this idea that we're going to support them or send them money, I don't even know how that works at this point in time. But people are doing it, and I see commercials and, like you said, bake sales. I didn't see any of your local news, although I could have if I wanted to sign up over at WallStreetWindow.com. But... I didn't see that stuff, so I didn't see the local access guy or the cookies or any of this. But this is simultaneous with all of the propaganda, and it is what it is. Right. Go ahead.
So the story in the New York Times was that it was basically saying who wins the war, and it wasn't saying the war's Ukraine and Russia. Mm-hmm. It was saying the war is the U.S. and Russia, but it by the way it articulates the argument, but it said who wins the war is going to depend on whether the American people can bear who breaks first. Will the American people break and over the high inflation, or will the people of Russia break over the destruction of the economy? Which Ooh. Side will break first will dictate who wins. I don't even know if that's any of that's true.
Yeah.
If that premise is true, probably isn't. It's probably not true at all. I mean, I don't know how long the war is going to go on. I don't know if it's going to last a couple months mm-hmm. or a couple years. I have no clue. So this whole economic argument that they made is maybe completely irrelevant, but it doesn't matter, because after I read that I saw on Twitter the subpar historian I'll just use that date phrase, I guess, okay. Niall Ferguson repeated it right on Twitter, and then he was a leading neoconservative English, British, historical, writer, but all for imperialism.
Right, right. Well, let me make something clear to you, though, Mike. I don't believe that that's the real circumstance, the thing I said to you about the American people being held hostage here. I think it's a justification for what it is we're experiencing. And,
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
Because the inflation, yes, it's going up. It's exasperated by the geopolitical situation.
Right.
But it began last year.
Exactly.
And it's caused by the accumulation of debt, supply chain disruptions, and the very fact that interest rates are zero and have been zero for so long.
Right.
Yes, people had fun playing on their apps that were trading because it helped the stock market go up. It helps real estate prices go up, which hurts people that rent, but helps speculators and people who own their home think they're getting rich. So in around 2012-11, Ben Bernanke, he was the Federal Reserve chairman, he began a quantitative easing bond buying operation where the Federal Reserve was buying all these bonds.
That's right.
And when he launched it, he wrote an editorial in the Wall Street Journal saying that these programs can help stimulate the economy by forcing the stock market up so that the people that own stocks will feel like they're getting rich and wouldn't spend money or go in debt. You'd be willing to use their credit cards.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that these low rate policies, people have benefited them or have felt like they benefited from them, but the cost of these policies are now showing up. Just like the 1970s, all that inflation in the 1970s was really caused by the so-called bread and butter policies of LBJ, financing the Vietnam War, which caused at that time the United States was globally linked to gold. The dollar was linked to gold through the Bretton Woods system, and the gold was draining out of the country because of the Vietnam War, and inflation started to pick up in 1967. It was below, it was at 2% or lower for since like 1950 or 48, just as it had been officially up until last year. So and then the inflation and the gold started to drain out, and Nixon took the U.S. off the dollar standard, and I think it was 71 73, the inflation became apparent, just as it is now. And the Arabs tried to take advantage of it, or they did. OPEC, they had the embargo in 1974, and then there was another oil crisis towards the end of Carter's presidency.
Yeah, 79 or 78.
79, yeah. But the inflation was an underlying trend. It wasn't simply these oil, you know, geopolitical crisis. And that's what's going on now. You know, it's an underlying trend that was already there that's being, as I said, exasperated. But the media is going to blame it all on Russia, and as you put it, tell people to accept it, you know, and think that it's their patriotic duty.
See, there it is.
To take it.
Yep.
Basically, the people are being economically punched in the face and beaten down, and are being told you got to take these beatings because of what's going on in Ukraine.
Well, you know, any good hostage taker is going to beat up the hostage a little bit, not too much, because you don't want to have a guy you got to take care of medically, but a little bit you got to rough him up, right? Because that way you'll make him compliant right away. So you rough him up a little bit, and that's it. That's why I said it's like the American people are being held hostage, and they're being told this is your patriotic duty. You hit the phrase right, nail, meat, hammer, okay? Right on the head.
And the problem with the now Ferguson argument or the New York Times argument that, well, the American people have just got to wait out the Russians and let them buckle. Well, I mean, who is to say their propaganda is going to be less effective against their population? Should it actually be more effective since they're in a shooting war? And it's right, you know, this is happening right on their border. The war is right on their border. Wouldn't the Russian people, yes, there are protesters, and I think the war is awful. I would like the protesters to win in Russia and stop the war. But, you know, in the end, the Vietnam War protesters didn't really end that war either. The war was, quite honestly, I believe, came to an end because the American military broke down.
Well, right. Now, let me just give you one thing, and then, you know, because we're going to come up to the end of the hour real fast here. The bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, is this is the corporations, the greater, larger corporations, recouping their 2020 and 2021 losses. That's all it is, actually. They're covering it with, oh, it's your patriotic duty now because of Russia and what they're doing in Ukraine. But to me, realistically, even though they're saying, okay, well, we still import so much Russian oil, yeah, I think it's all nonsense. I think the bottom line is we have this huge on-demand audience for oil. Somebody will fill that, okay, if you shop it the right way. Now, if you just go back to the OPEC well and you just go back to the UAE, you know, and Saudi Arabia, yeah, you're going to get the same result, but there are other sources. Somebody would love to be able to step up production and cash in right now, I'm sure. Okay? So here's the bottom line. When you take a look at these oil companies making record high profits at this point, okay, they're not affected at all. Okay? And you look at a lot of these other corporate gains that are occurring here, I don't know. I tend to believe that this is merely, let's get our money back that we didn't get. Because unless you were Amazon or something like that, you didn't thrive during the lockdowns, okay? You didn't thrive during the great disruption here, where a lot of places had to shut down and people lost money. And, you know, it was like, okay, so PPE went out and all this stuff. I get it, okay? But to me, this is the corporations going, okay, let's get our money back that we lost for the past 2 years. Because even if they only gained $1 billion and they normally gain 10, they see that as a $9 billion loss. You know what I mean? So that's what's going on here. I think the oil companies are at the head of the pack, making sure they get their money back from when the oil metric broke and became a negative price point. Okay, and they weren't selling as much because people weren't traveling because there was nowhere to travel. You were locked down. And if you weren't locked down locally, you couldn't go to another state because they had restrictions on and on and on and on. Air travel went down, you name it. So fuel was less in demand. So leading the pack, I think it's the oil companies saying, okay, now it's time to get back our profits that we lost there for a little while. And they didn't lose, by the way. It's not like they were about to go out of business.
Well, maybe that's why the Saudis and OPEC don't want to produce more oil. They like the high price.
Well, that's the thing. Why should they, you know, glut the market and go back to half of the price?
Yeah,
because
they don't want to do that.
Not long ago, you and I were talking about $50 a barrel oil. Now it's well above $100. So, you know, Mike, if I was telling you you sell cheese sandwiches, okay, at a corner deli, and, okay, one day they're worth $2, the next day they're worth $5, all right? And I tell you, listen, Mike, if you make more of those cheese sandwiches, you know, you could charge $3 for them. You're going to say, well, why should I? I'm getting $5, okay? You know, I don't get this, that people don't understand. But they're going to tell you, I swear, that it's like, okay, it's your, like you said, patriotic duty. Just like the acceptance of the greater surveillance state, it was your patriotic duty to accept all of this intrusion into your life because, ready? That's how we're going to prevent this from happening again, because it was a failure of intelligence. We need to know this stuff. If we had paid attention to these guys getting their pilot's license, da-da-da-da, on and on. So this is the same kind of justification, even though, as anybody who's got a memory and was alive a year ago knows, we've been getting squeezed like this already. It had nothing to do with it. But they're going to say, look, you know what the other idea is? We could go into war, but that's going to put your sons and daughters in harm's way. You don't want that again, do you? I really feel like it's a hostage situation. You know, either give us your children or pay us more money. I mean, that's the way I feel about it, and I know that that's a really crappy way to put it, but again, sort of right in line, you see other people coming together with this thought, like you said, on the local public access and all that. I don't think it's insane. I think this is literally the strategy by people that own way too much wealth. Seriously, that's where I'm at with this. Maybe I'm crazy, Mike. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a situation they're taking advantage of to spin it that way. I don't think they created the situation, if that makes sense.
Look, you never let a good crisis go to waste, I think, is a fair statement that is not just merely the sole intellectual property of one party or of one oligarch or of one grand corporatist,
In the TV cable networks. I mean, sure. Their ratings, you know, were collapsing over the past, let's say, 6 months. People were tired of the political news. Trump was gone, and people were just exhausted from watching the COVID crisis and all this and that.
Right.
They tuned out of the TV news, and this is helping them generate more ratings by focusing solely on Ukraine, because it creates type of narrative so perfect for television.
Well, look,
where you got one bad guy in the rest of the world.
Exactly. And people were exhausted with the COVID coverage, honestly. And as you said, look, before Trump arrived, they had nothing. And they got him and they created a bonanza. They need an enemy, okay, in order to cover an enemy of humanity, an enemy of the country, something. They need that for people to tune in, to either get mildly afraid or worried, and to continue the cycle. I mean, of course they do. Of course they do. And Trump was perfect, because you could either love him or hate him, and that was great. It would drive ratings for all of them. So anyway, Mike, go ahead and take a minute. And I'm sorry I talked so much, but I mean, honestly, this is where I'm at with this. I see it this way. And again, like you said, you could argue whether it's been engineered or not. But the idea that it's not being taken advantage of, I think there's no possible plausible argument for it.
Well, what gets me, one of the things, you know, that has frustrated me about the whole situation of Russia and Ukraine, reading about it, is, as I said, you know, I'm reading the New York Times. I get the New York Times or subscribe to the Times, the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, and I don't feel, and I'll look at some alternative media. I hardly ever watch the television at all, but I don't feel like anyone really knows what's going on or is able to predict how this is going to unfold, and it's presented as if they can and just know all these things.
Well, of course, Mike. Look,
I think there's more uncertainty in this situation than other situations.
Yes, sir. Look, nobody is going to be able to prognosticate their way out of this one. But, you know, fact is, these guys never know what's coming. They are along for the ride, along with the rest of us, despite all their experts and their alleged expertise and their familiarity with, you know, all of these things. We got quotes from inside sources, unnamed sources, so on and so forth. It's irrelevant. They're along for the ride, and you know what they're looking to do? Cash out on it just like everybody else. Every conglomerate corporation out there is just going to keep cashing in until we squeal. Mike, I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson, it is always great to talk to you, sir, but I got to tell you, I agree with you about nearly all of this, except I'm not so sure somebody didn't engineer this, because it just seems a little too convenient. But maybe it's just me again being cynical and slightly paranoid. But that's me. So anyway, Mike, thanks for talking to me.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started.
WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Ocelli.com.
When a fan of the Ocelli Effect calls in to the Ocelli Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and JP Sicilian and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have no idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send email and death threats.
Shelly.com.
Uncle, do you remember that time when the year 2012 was going to create the apocalypse, end of the world?
Right. And it thought it would come to the end.
Did it ever end up that way?
No.
Yeah.
Like we say, the only way it will end is when he is ready for
That's
it
right.
to end. That's how it is.
So if you want the real truth about 2012, you better listen to the Ocelli.com radio network.
Radio podcast.com.
Yeah, forget it's John Cusack.
John Cusack
doesn't know
doesn't
what he's talking about.
Know what he's talking actually about. Correct.
But we here at the Ocelli Radio Network sure do.
Do you sure understand and understand where it's actually coming from?
Ocelli.com.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to the Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now at Ocelli.com, but of course you could be hearing it some other time, some other place, so welcome no matter who you are, where you are, when you are. Yeah, it's the second hour of Thor's Day. And I have with me the duo there behind Failed State Update, co-host J.G. Michael, and of course the guy who started it, Joseph L. Flatley. I don't know what to say about something that we recorded but haven't released yet. I don't curse on my show. Anyway, maybe they'll tell you about that. I don't know. First off, how you doing, Joseph L. Flatley?
Fantastic. I recovered from our last conversation on Monday, and I'm ready for round two.
Yeah, you guys didn't get to hear that, but you will soon. And he recovered. Oh God, you know, it made me hate ministry,
you guys,
for God's sake. Thank you.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry, spoke over you. You hate ministry because of me. Well, you guys had to listen to it once. I had to edit it. I had to do some deep listening to Baked Alaska and Jazzy Kelly or whatever his name is, who won't comply, about 50 times. So it's just very... So that stuff was stuck in my head for like 3 days. So I guess the joke's on me.
It topped off with Gabriel from Urantia there, okay? the so-called prophet from Pittsburgh himself. What did you do to us? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was a bit of a change of pace for me. I mean, I spent the weekend talking to, like, Roger Waters in D.C., and then I come back to listening to, you know, the guy that's Gabriel from Urantia. But, you know, I like that. It's a change of pace.
I tell you, I spent a couple hours talking to my Punisher action figure, okay, after that, because just anything not to have that stuff in my ear hole any longer. It was rough, man. Oh, you guys. Okay, so the failed state update jukebox. What is it called exactly? I forget
just
now.
Failed state jukebox. We do this so the listeners know what we're talking about. We have this like regular column on the failed state update website. It's called Failed State Jukebox, and it's just like highlights like the most ridiculous like right wing conservative weirdo reactionary pop music and rock music. Because there's a lot of, like, you know, everybody talks about how liberal Hollywood is, but there's, like, in the music industry, but there's a real underbelly of, like, grassroots music of, like, really just kind of generically bad pop music or pretty decent hip-hop for the most part, although we didn't hear any that day. And we were just playing these, like, really bad, silly, dumb songs. And it's, like, I guess one or two is funny, but when you do it for an hour, it's just, like, torture.
They made me listen to Kid Rock, folks. I'm just telling you, they did. I mean, I shouldn't say they, because I don't think it was JG's fault, but
don't blame me.
Oh man, JG's throwing me under the bus.
He said, yeah, see that bus, see underneath there, that's where you go. Just saying. Oh man. Anyway, I don't want to spend all the time on this because I'm sure you guys got some other things to cover, and I turn it over to you. And actually, I want to start with JG Michael. Let him go first because, oh, Joe, come on, man. Why'd you do that? JG Michael, anything else you want to say about the jukebox, or would you like to move on to some other piece of trauma?
I would just say I'm glad we got a good Gerald Cassell track in. I always like my man from Devo.
Okay.
Jihad Jerry.
No, that was cool. I dug that one. And at the very, very end, I don't know if you're going to keep it in, but I like insisted on playing something from Diesel Automatic. Who then I tweeted out something, one of his songs called Natural Law, I think, on Twitter, and he responded to it. And I've several times tried to get an interview with him, and there's always some weird problem. So this time I just said on Twitter, hey, man, you know, how do I get an interview with you? Let's do this already. Because I'm tired of turning people on to you. And I know you guys had never actually heard Diesel before, had you?
Not at all. It was dope. I was like, you were talking about it, and I was like Googling it, but I was spelling Diesel correctly, and nothing was coming up.
Right.
And then when you sent me the link, I was really happy to find that. It's like, you know, talk about the real reason that this kind of music exists. You know, it's like actually like conscious raising, intelligent lyrics and about something real. It's just too rare, you know.
Yeah, and it's very cool what he does. You know, there's a couple other guys out there. Volunteer, and the guy from Canada, Raven Mad, he calls himself, I think. Payday Monsanto. Well, sometimes I'm with him, and sometimes I'm not. But I've interviewed him several times, and he's at least thinking for himself, for the most part. You know, look. There's all kinds of ways to go with this, and I love stuff that's conscious beyond the mainstream for sure. I know we don't just want to talk about music, so like I said, maybe JG wants to talk about the conference he was at, you know, get off his mind what it is we recorded that day. Can't wait until it comes
out.
Yeah,
if I can talk about the conference, I'm actually working on an article about an aspect of the conference for Field State Update. So I was at the Transcending the Israel Lobby at Home and Abroad conference. Usually it's set up to happen a week before AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, meets. It's sort of a counter-AIPAC conference. But AIPAC for the past 2 years hasn't really been doing its conferences. And also AIPAC has been changing its game plan a little. The Israel Lobby is now becoming an actual political action pact. It's a very interesting conference because you hear from a lot of voices. A lot of Palestinian scholars were there, like Radhika Sanaf, who has been doing work on Palestinian free speech, the free speech of Palestinian Americans who are now having their free speech attacked by this thing called the Canary Mission. That's a whole story on its own, but there were a number of speakers there. Gideon Levy, who's one of the best journalists in Israel, I would say. He's been covering for years the sort of collective punishment that has been brought upon Gaza. And also the final speaker there was none other than Roger Waters from Pink Floyd. And I got to hear about his feuds with people like Nick Cave from the Bad Seeds. So it was a very good time. But one particular presentation stood out for me. It was a presentation by a man by the name of Edward Ahmed Mitchell. And he is an attorney that works for CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. They're a Muslim American civil rights group. And it just so happens they just had a huge scandal. They were being spied upon by a fellow by the name of Steve Emerson and his group, the Investigative Project on Terrorism. And IPT says that it's interested in investigating, the terrorists among us, the jihadis. But really, you know, a lot of groups have outed them as essentially being a hate group that fuels Islamophobia. And I think that's a correct assessment. What's interesting is that CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, actually was able to dig up some emails after they found out one of their own members, the leader of CARE Ohio, was actually working as a spy for this Investigative Project on Terrorism group. And it's really interesting because it turns out after the scandal unraveled a little bit, and the person from CARE Ohio was, I believe his name is Roman Iqbal, and it came out that he was spying for this IPT group. But then in these emails, we find out that it appears the Israeli government was in contact with IPT asking for information on Students for Justice or Students for Palestine, Students for Justice in Palestine. They were actually asking for information from IPT about this student group, and trying to connect them to Hamas. So you literally have this, you know, Islamophobic hate group that paints itself as, you know, being a counterterrorism project, working with the Israeli government to spy on Muslim Americans and particularly Palestinian activists. And I'm currently working on a story about that. And next week, I'm actually going to be interviewing, God willing, Edward Ahmed Mitchell, the attorney that's covering this for CARE. So to me, that's a huge story. And I hope that I'll be shedding a lot of light on it in the coming days and weeks.
See, it's a huge story, but at the same time, I mean, I am always shocked to find that this is still a thing, that we're still dealing with the, I hate to put it this way, but I'm gonna, you know, this paranoia, you know, the Islamo-fascists are coming to kill us all, you know, kind of mentality. I'm surprised that still survives, you know, in Canada and in the United States. It's like, don't you guys realize that, yeah, they're not coming here? You know, the whole, we got to fight them over there so they don't come over here. And they're not coming. The more that these things go on over there, and the more, you know, we do things like Iraq, okay, you might provoke some stuff. But honestly, it's not like these people are looking to cut. They're going to institute Sharia law, JG. You know, I mean,
It's so funny because I think Edward Ahmed Mitchell actually said during his presentation, I'd have to watch it again. They're actually, all the videos for it are up. I believe they're up on the YouTube channel of the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, wow, who co-organized the conference with the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy. Anyone can view those videos. But I believe the presentation by Mr. Mitchell, he actually mentioned, you know, we have nothing to hide. And one thing that was really powerful for me was that he pointed out that, you know, this is not a new thing. And he talked about COINTELPRO and the history of what was done to many people in the civil rights movement in the 60s, including Martin Luther King.
Right.
This is just old hat in a lot of ways.
Well, you know, but with Martin Luther King, it was, he's in bed with the communists, he's in bed with the communists. You know, anybody who's a part of this, they're all being funded by the communists. And then when we got the Islamo-fascist boogeyman, well, that was a whole other thing. And meanwhile, it's much ado about, I just don't understand. These guys are continuously drilling, you know, dry holes. You know, like the thing about, remember Flint, Michigan? Flint, Michigan has switched over to Sharia law. And then you go and you check it out. And it's like, no, that's not the case. I mean, I remember doing that on my show where people were like, no, that's happening. And I'm like, man, you guys are just...
I was going to say it's fascinating because I believe Steve Emerson has been doing this since at least the 90s. And I think he actually came on the scene as a counter-jihad expert, you know, a terrorism expert. I believe after the Oklahoma City bombing, I believe he was one of these figures that bought into the Gianna Davis conspiracy theory about the Oklahoma City bombing. It's known as the third terrorist theory. That's the name of the book that Gianna Davis wrote that claims that it was Saddam Hussein and jihadi terrorists that helped Timothy McVeigh with the Oklahoma City bombing.
Wait. So, was Saddam Hussein like the unidentified man they never found, or was it just that he was funding it? I mean,
I don't think he was the unidentified man. Okay. That's not what they were saying. But they're saying that he was the...
Might as well.
...brains behind it. Him and Al-Qaeda, which is weird because Saddam and Al-Qaeda didn't get along.
Yeah, well...
None of it makes sense. And
I just find
it very interesting that they're targeting... it's especially disturbing to see that they're targeting student activists from Students for Justice for Palestine. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we saw what happened last year with Emily Wilder, who was working at the Associated Press and was fired shortly after the Associated Press building was hit in the Middle East.
By
Israeli missile. Yeah.
Because they were stating that, what was it, Hamas was firing missiles from that building or something? And
yes. Yeah, and so what happened was Emily Wilder was actually, in her university days, a member of Jewish Voice for Peace. And I'm blanking on the university she was at. I think it was Stanford, actually. But it's interesting because after she graduates, she goes to work for the Associated Press. And all these young Republican students who claim to hate cancel culture, they went to AP. And they said, well, you should know Emily Wilder was part of Jewish Voice for Peace and worked with these Palestinian groups. And, you know, she... You know, that means she has a bias. She can't be reporting on this or that, even if she wasn't reporting on Israel-Palestine. And eventually she got fired because of it. I mean, within, you know, like a day.
Right.
And, you know, it's very sad to see the targeting of young activists like that. Mm-hmm. It's heartbreaking.
Well, and this is truly the element that you bring to a failed state update, right? Which is where you go into some of these things that... Honestly, I think, you know, Joe, you've covered some of the weirder things out there for sure, you know, and JG is very, very much more political. So I can see how this really fills out the failed state update team because.
Oh, sure.
You know,
it's like the concept behind failed state update is what is a failed state? Is America a failed state, or more to the point, America is a failed state? A lot of that is like the goofier cultural aspects, which I cover, and that's my beat, and I think it's really important.
Right.
But also the ramifications to, you know, foreign policy and politics, like you know, it's such a big story, the impending collapse of America.
Well, right.
You know, I couldn't do it all myself.
What's really good is that in some ways I think, you know, you can look at the sort of culture of the sort of wackiness of maybe militias and whatnot. And on the other hand, I can look at some of the things like, for instance, what we were talking about, you know, how certain people are spied upon, especially marginalized people, and discriminated against. And I think it's two sides of the failed state.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, and yeah, that's the thing is you could state that, Joe's beat is literally the result of the things that you're covering or vice versa without a problem here. You know, it's a circular it's definitely a circular feedback loop here where, you know, bad ideas turn into actions and then turn into justifications for different things going on. And you have this whirlpool of, you know, the thing as we're going down the drain. I mean, so I don't know. I'm trying to visualize this. It makes sense to me, Joe. Go ahead.
I love that you get it.
Yeah.
You understand.
Well, but listen, I'm glad to, although I'm not glad that I'm living through it. I got to be honest with you because...
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know when else I would be, you know, it's kind of like I love living in this time because it's so weird and awful, but I mean, like, I wouldn't wish it on anybody else, that's for sure.
No, but you belong in a weird, awful time because, and no offense, you belong in a weird, awful time because yeah. you will bring out those things. And now we've heard about what JG is working on. Do you have anything new coming up that maybe, I mean, if people go and get the newsletter, they would be aware of right off the bat some of the things, because you don't just do one story and drop it.
Right.
You continuously do different series that are remarkably disturbing and entertaining. So what is the latest coming from you now that we got kind of an update from JG?
Well, one story I'm particularly proud of is it's just called Interview with a Political Prisoner. And what it is it's I met this guy named Bradford Metcalf. He's a militia activist from, you know, back in the days of the first Michigan militia. So turn of the 20th century, I guess, like 95, 96.
Okay.
And he was set up in a, you know, in a ATF scheme, very similar, apparently similar to what's happening with the Wolverine Watchmen militia in Michigan.
Okay.
So Metcalf was a militia guy, and at the time, the leader of the Michigan militia was this guy named Ken Carter. And excuse me. So Ken Carter was absolutely nuts. And like, it's like these militia guys, they didn't really take it all that seriously. They just loved training and wearing uniforms and shooting guns.
Yeah.
And like, so, you know, when you have a guy on disability who's kind of nuts but has plenty of time to make phone calls all day, you elect him your commander, apparently. So they voted him the commander. So this Ken Carter guy, next thing you know, he's like making all these meetings with people that he doesn't realize are ATF informants.
Wow.
And handing out prescription drugs and talking a really big talk about, you know, assassinating cops and blowing up all this stuff in Calhoun County, Michigan.
Jeez.
And, you know, so the way these federal cases usually work is they're just interested in a bust. So
right.
They go to Ken Carter. They get Ken Carter to flip on these other two guys that weren't involved, weren't doing anything. And the other two guys, you know, being innocent, you know, go to court and proclaim their innocent, do not plead guilty, and then they go to jail for 50 years.
Well,
so,
yeah, see, now an interesting thing about this, Joe, and I don't know if I'm providing you any insight here or not, is that I would say 8-9 years ago, when I was, you know, very early on doing this show, there was a woman that used to come on who was part of that Michigan militia who had been there a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, the resulting paranoia that was among them, she was only identified as Lady Pitbull, by the way. and because she had this propensity to want to save pit bulls because they were being, you know, unfairly treated by people because, you know, they're destroyed quite often and this kind of thing, because they're aggressive dogs.
Sure.
And, you know, like I had a little discussion with her about that. She got totally irate with me about that. But, you know, I did a few shows with her, and it was like this whole thing about being infiltrated and provocateurs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was coming from a legitimate place because this is the MO of the feds, let's be honest. Even on Tuesday, I had Sally Castillo on my show.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm sure you're somewhat familiar with Sally, right?
The name is not familiar.
Okay.
Iran Contra.
Yes, yeah. Sir. Iran
Powder
Contra.
Burns.
Powder Burns. That's his book. Right. Exactly, JG. Well, you know, a few years ago, Selly went to prison too. again, ATF kind of thing, where they got him on some sort of shotgun and this and that. But the truth is that if you're somebody who's inconvenient to the system, quite often they try and set you up on a, you know, firearms charge.
Sure.
You know, look, anybody could think back to David Koresh and that whole situation. And again, look, I'm not saying I'm on the side of the Branch Davidians entirely, but, you know, there's a lot of open questions there, okay?
Well, Chuck, right. it's not to interrupt you, but it's like Ruby Ridge, right? Like,
yes, sir.
I don't have to be a fan of Randy Weaver or want to be his neighbor, because I probably would not have gotten along with the Weavers if I were their neighbor.
No, look, I can perfectly think Weaver's a scumbag, but it doesn't mean that. Go ahead.
It was entrapment. It was entrapment.
Yes.
What they did.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
No, yes. Exactly.
And that's what happened. As far as I can tell, I'm not sure. I guess it'll have to work its way through the courts. But as far as I can tell, that's what happened in Michigan with these Wolverine Watchmen who apparently, allegedly wanted to kidnap the governor. And it's definitely what happened to this Bradford Metcalf. Uh-huh. So I did a while back, I did a feature. It's called A Tale of Two Militias. It's on the Failed State Update website where I cover both those cases. But Brad and I have kind of gotten along. You know, it's kind of, we laugh. I'm like, I'm a leftist. I think militias are crazy. He's on the right, and he thinks socialists have caused every problem in the world. But
of course,
we can both agree that, you know, we should be having these conversations at the bar, you know, not over the prison email system, because he's stuck there for 50 years or 40 years, or I think it's 38, actually.
Okay.
So I'm pretty happy with his with that interview. And then the big feature for the week is it's called "Would You Buy a Vaccine Exemption from Gerald Celente?"
Oh God!
Yeah, Gerald Celente.
It's kind of a fun, yeah. So to those who aren't laughing in the audience, Gerald Celente is just this, like, he calls himself a futurist, and basically he just makes these awful YouTube videos where he talks about how war's right around the corner. And now he's like, he's become like a weird internet preacher. He started a church, the Universal Church of Freedom, Peace, and Justice. Have you heard of that, Chuck?
Okay, I haven't seen that, because the last time I checked with him, it was the the International Forecaster was his
Trends Journal.
The Trends Journal. Wasn't it the International Forecaster, or am I mixing them up?
I think that might be Catherine Austin Fitz or somebody.
Okay,
yeah,
he's the Trends
Research Institute.
Okay, okay. No, but I remember this because he was definitely a part of the Alex Jones universe for a while.
Oh, sure. He was. Yeah, he was always on InfoWars.
Yeah, and he is a popular guy alt media wise. In fact, I mean, I even thought about bringing him on my show. Just because, you know,
a fun show.
Well, he's entertaining.
Really,
I will say
he's
that.
Entertaining
really
as hell, and you know, I may still consider that in the near future, bringing him on, just because I want to hear what he has to say. But I wasn't aware that he started a church. And man, you know, really quickly before you move on to this, please, is that you know, it just coincidentally, and I don't want to reveal the name, but I met a guy who is the son of one of the militia leaders here in Georgia that was swept up in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
That just got out of prison not too long ago.
I wonder what he went away for. That's a long-ass sentence.
You know
Excuse
what?
Me.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, like, he was swept up late 90s, you know? And and he had been there up until maybe a few years ago. And I'm trying to convince people to talk to me publicly. The second that I do, I will gladly also pass along your contact information.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Because I think you would find some interesting insights there. But anyway, back to Gerald Celente, because this is interesting. He's got a church now. Okay. Why am I not surprised? Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, he's this guy. He always had this kind of philosophical bent. It was interesting. So I interviewed him in 2012. I don't think there was a real story there. I was just like, I had started reading his stuff and I thought it was hilarious. So I emailed him. I was like, can we do a story of like the top trends of 2013? Because it was the end of 2012. And
right.
That's basically what he does for journalists, is he tells them the top trends and then they never happen.
And it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing because everybody was expecting, you know, a Mayan calendar end of the world, right, in December of 2012. So... there was a weird atmosphere around, and he definitely was capitalizing on it. Just for the record, somebody in my chat room just said that they wouldn't buy a used vacuum cleaner from him. But just saying, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
So you know, I did this interview, never did anything with it, just filed it away. And then a few years ago, I got an email from his press person. It was like, we want to offer you a free subscription to Trends Journal, his like weird newsletter. So I've been like just looking at Trends Journal every month, thinking like, when am I going to write about Gerald Celente? And then like I saw he started this church. I'm like, oh, I got to do a story about this. And you know, he's like one of these guys who's like, you know, we all, I think all of us here on this show tonight have kind of differing informed opinions about COVID and how to handle it.
Sure.
But then there are the people whose minds completely snapped, like Right Said Fred or Van Morrison, and like, you know, they're comparing themselves to Jews in the Holocaust and stuff. Mm. And that's Gerald Celente. So he started this church, and it's like he's having rallies in Kingston, New York, where his office is, and it's like they're church services, but the people who are talking are like Mark Crispin Miller and Judge Napolitano and Paul Craig Roberts.
Wow.
and then as far as I can tell, the only other thing the church does is sell religious vaccine exemptions for $100.
$100.
I have to say, though, I do want to hear a Gerald Celente sermon, because I think I'm going to be hearing in the background, you know, if you know what I mean there.
No, yeah, fine. Yeah, yeah. I got you there. But, you know, he used to have a radio commercial for the Trends Journal, which I used to encounter on some of the radio stations I used to listen to. And even his radio commercial was entertaining, honestly. So
he's so funny. I mean, I tried to get an interview about the church, and they like big timed me. They're like, oh, you know, they're like, how much traffic do you have? And I told them, and they're like, oh, well, we'll get back to you or something.
Yeah, see, that's the weird thing that, like, I made an arrangement to do an interview with him a couple years ago, and they wanted all my numbers, and then kind of gave me that same, you know, well, you know, maybe it's not quite big enough. We'll get back to you. Now, funny thing about this is, just for the record, you know, I'm an ordained minister, and maybe I should sell exemptions for $50. I mean, you know,
undercut them.
I'm sorry. I digress on your story. Go ahead, Joe.
So I did a feature about Gerald. You know, he's like, I tried to get him, you know, I tried to get him for an interview, and then they asked me for my numbers and never got back to me. And I was like, well, the hell with it. So I went and found this old interview that I did in 2012. I don't know how I still had it, but because I'm not that well organized. And it was pretty interesting, because like, I'm asking him about, like, so what's the future trends? And then he goes off on this big rant about, he basically, speaking of entertainment, he's like yelling and swearing and talking about how, like, we have to raise the planetary consciousness and all this stuff. And I'm like, we're, you know, and I was just thinking, he was kind of like a new age philosopher even back then. So, you know, maybe the Universal Church of Peace and Justice isn't that far off from what he was doing, but okay. You know,
what
it's
the world
just,
really needs, though, is we need a co-sermon. We need Max Kaiser and Gerald Celente to do a sermon together.
Yeah, they're always like texting at each other and stuff. So they're on the it's so funny. What is Gerald Celente's? He's just like a funny dude. So check out the article. It's got like the, you know, it's kind of a profile of Gerald plus talking about the church, which is hilarious. I got a image gallery of some of the best covers of Trends Journal and some links to some really hilarious videos featuring a screaming Gerald, and like fun.
Well, you know what the most entertaining story was to me related to Celente is when he went through that whole thing about telling people only take physical possession of gold, otherwise you're an idiot. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but that was basically his pitch for a while. And then he got really, really angry when somebody didn't honor his gold contracts, where he paid money for not a physical delivery of gold. I think that was, I don't know, 7 years ago, something like that. And I was like, that's just actually really funny. The advice he was given to everybody else, he didn't take himself, and now he's upset. And I remember there was this whole irate thing because he lost like a lot of money somehow, right? Do you remember that story, Joe?
I don't. I just, you know, it's like,
oh, you ought to look
really
back at it.
I really would love to do a deep dive into him because it's like, you know, when you're a futurist, there's basically like two ways to make money. It's like you either tell rich people and corporations what they want to hear, or you go to like people in the alternative media world and sell them, and you're a pitch man for like basically like scammy products. And I definitely think, you know, I don't know, but Gerald Celente, his everything he's ever done on the internet really just reminds me of all these internet marketing con artists that I've covered in the past. So it's like all I know is he's really rich. He's like snapping up colonial era properties in Kingston, New York, developing them, you know. And I mean, he's definitely not getting rich because he's able to tell people that at some vague point in the next 20 years there's going to be a war, or if the price of gold keeps rising a little bit each year, it will rise unless it doesn't. You know, it's I mean, his predictions fall so flat. It's just, you know, they call it, what do they call it? The Texas sharpshooter phenomenon.
There's
it's like,
that, yeah. There's
you
that.
Know, it's like he's like the rhetorical equivalent of like shooting the side of a barn and then like painting a target around the hole.
I got you. I'm laughing at my chatters because it's just like vax exemptions and penis pills. Of course, that's what they sell. What else we got here? You don't want to wait for the death camps to fight the totalitarians or whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, they know exactly what you're talking about. Celente's hilarious, though. I mean, energetic. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, he's just so funny and weird, and what he says is great. I mean, as I interviewed him, like I had to like keep like taking my headphones off because he was screaming so loud.
I mean, I'm gonna say something that will probably get me in trouble with some people, but Celente is one of those characters that you almost end up having to have like a fondness of because he's so he's an American character.
I'm glad you said that, JJ, because I was going to say, you know, at the end of all this, I kind of like him because it's just it's the Sid Vicious thing where it's like he's a complete disaster and you just go, I don't know, for some reason I just got to kind of the way he falls face first, you know, into his bad predictions are it's just so well done.
And I mean, he's just a fantastic character.
Right,
if like,
right.
And you know, I mean, I don't like doing stories like this because
it's
like
it's style.
He's gonna Google me at some point and
yes, he is.
Yell at me. And yeah. Well, it's funny because that story came out yesterday, and today I got an email from his publicist. I'm like, oh god, like that was quick. Like, and then the thing was like, Gerald's really busy this month, but check back next month about an interview. So,
like, okay. Oh, boy.
I guess they don't have the Google alert set at the Trends Institute.
Maybe not. I don't know what they got set over there. Yikes. So that's fascinating for sure. And we got, you know, enough time here. We could go into some other stuff. But You guys crack me up. I just want you to know that. You crack me up, and it is so brilliant. People need to go check out the Failed State Update. Of course, they need to check out Parallax Views podcast as well. So before we run out of time, again, do the obligatory. Let them know where they can find stuff. You know, there is the Patreon. You guys don't need to starve while you do this. You know, like most of us do. You guys do a lot of work. And it is well worth the price of admission if people sign up for the newsletter, which there is a free one. But there's also one you can pay for, get a bit more content, right? JG has his thing, too. I mean, just give people that before we go any further into this conversation. God knows what you're going to pull out next. But long as you're not playing music, I think we'll be okay, Joe. Oh, my God. I can't wait till people
hear
that thing.
I can grab my
thing.
Guitar and do a acoustic set of Failed State Jukebox music if you want.
Sure, why not? But before you do that,
No, that's not going to happen.
Tell them where they can find stuff.
All right. Well, failedstateupdate.com. That's the website. If you go to lennyflatley.substack.com, you can subscribe. You know, you can subscribe to the newsletter for free, and you'll get all the updates, and that's very much appreciated. If you want to kick in either a monthly or a yearly payment, it's like that's the main and really only way besides buying my books to support me. And that's very much appreciated. And, of course, search your podcast app of choice for Failed State Update or Parallax Views.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I know JG has his Patreon. So
yep. Patreon.com/ParallaxViews and ParallaxViews.podbean.com. I wanted to talk about some things I have up on there, but we could always talk about that another time.
Well, no, fair enough. I mean, unless Joe wants to go into something else, we could turn back to you for a couple of minutes and get into that, because every time I look at the feed for JG's stuff, I am absolutely riveted, because there is always very cool guests, very cool topics of discussion with some of the most intellectually savvy people that you could possibly get. I'm always impressed by that, by the way. So, yeah, let's find out a little bit about what you got going on over there, because I sort of think of this hour that you guys are going to do every 2 weeks here as the Failed State Update. So that includes you, JG. So what do you got coming on Parallax Views?
So I just released a very interesting episode that was, it was planned out last week a little bit, but it was sort of impromptu. So I got to speak with this journalist. He's a freelancer by the name of Aaron Lake Smith. In 2018, he wrote an article for Harper's Magazine called A Light in the Donbas Window, which is about the People's Republics of Donetsk and Luhansk. And I said, oh my God, this article seems very relevant in light of what's happening now with Ukraine. So I ended up speaking with him. And he related the really weird Hall of Mirrors, spy versus spy, cloak and dagger experience of going to the quote-unquote international anti-fascist conference in the Donbass in 2018. And what he details is a very weird world in which you had people in these two republics that, you know, declared themselves independent from Ukraine and wanting to rejoin Russia. These people that went to this conference, though, they're a mix of everything from national Bolsheviks, self-described national Bolsheviks who follow the ideas of Alexander Dugin, very far right. And then on the other hand, you have these people who are tankies. For people that don't know, tankies are sort of these figures that are just so anti-U.S. imperialism that they will defend anyone who is anti-U.S. imperialism, including Putin, Kadyrov, Xi, etc. But what he details is just how all these sort of disparate individuals came together in the Donbass, and how in a way they became, you know, the pawns in a proxy war or a seeming proxy war between NATO and Russia. And it's a very spy versus spy story with a lot of people not knowing who's playing whom and who's playing for who. And it's a very strange, very relevant story in light of, of course, Vladimir Putin as one of his pretexts for invading Ukraine was talking about Donetsk and Luhansk.
No, absolutely relevant story at this time for sure. And I'm going to have to check that out myself, because quite frankly, I think that anybody who thinks they've got this, the entirety of the circumstance, what came together beforehand, nailed, is lying to themselves. Because
what's so strange, Chuck, is that you had all these leaders in the People's Republics of Luhansk and Donetsk. They're sort of a rotating cast of leaders, and some of them mysteriously disappear, or they end up being killed in car bombings. And the lucky ones, as my guests put it, are spotted in Russia after being outed from their leadership position or leaving their leadership position, and they sort of disappear into the belly of Russia. So it's a very weird world that's completely cloak and dagger, and a rotating cast of characters who come and go and disappear, and some end up either dead or disappearing.
Fair enough. And, you know, this leads me to nearly the last 10 minutes of our talk tonight, where I've decided, and didn't tell you guys, but I decided I'm going to come up with a weird question to cap each one of these failed state update updates, and pass it to each of you and see if I get a slightly different answer from each of you, because Joe and JG are definitely two different characters. And I find it really interesting the way you guys are meshing together. I love it. It is a great, great upgrade that you've given to the failed state update, Joe, with adding JG and all of his skills, his very curious intellect, which is decidedly unique among people that you could have brought in. So really excellent choice. Anyway, enough of that. I've complimented you enough. The point is,
I say,
and both of you, I mean, you guys are great. I love it that you're working together. But anyway, here's my strange question, and I guess I'll start with Joe this time. What has happened to Edward Snowden? Because it seems to me this would be an interesting time for him to rear his, I don't know if you want to call it ugly head, but it seems like it would be a good time for the American dissident in Russia to come out and talk about the propaganda, or to talk about, you know, the American whatever he is, right? Why do we not see, and what are your thoughts on the lack of Edward Snowden coming out at this time, or did I miss it? Joe?
I haven't seen any Edward Snowden, and to be perfectly honest, I haven't thought about him when I realized at all. I haven't thought about him at all when I realized that the, like, leaking documents to The Intercept and to, you know, Pierre Omidyar, whatever you say his name, was just, like, being used as some, like, cynical ploy to create a media business and monetize whistleblowing. So it's kind of like, you know, what's ever up with Edward Snowden? It's either like libertarian nonsense or weird stuff about using Tor. I don't know. I don't know that he's particularly relevant. And if I were him, I wouldn't want to be particularly relevant. Last thing you need is to be like tagged with working with the enemy or, you know.
His Twitter has not. I just checked his Twitter, Joseph. He has not tweeted since February. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's got so many firm beliefs and such a strong ideology and, you know.
But he's oddly silent at this time.
Yeah.
So, okay. No, fair enough. And you probably gave him no thought until I just brought him up. But,
yeah. You know, it's like, you know, I don't take him seriously as a public intellectual. I don't take him seriously as a activist. You know, he did something. He probably took himself seriously as an activist. But what has he really done? Other than, like, you know, it's like I haven't, you know, love him or lump him, Julian Assange has a really strong perspective, and he has a lot of things to say, a lot of which is important, and he's never stopped saying it, no matter where, you know, no matter what, you know, that's, you know, whether you agree with him or not, you have to respect him for, you know, putting everything into his mission. You know, it's like Edward Snowden. He's like, all right, I just don't have, like, the respect for him. I don't see him doing anything that's admirable.
Well, frankly,
but thanks for the leak.
No problem. Look, frankly, I've got no respect for him or Assange. Okay, because I see them both as perfectly useful tools for the intelligence agencies, at the most generous evaluation, and quite frankly, I think that they are, you know, the results of limited hangouts, both of them. And that's all there is to it. So I don't free Assange. And, you know, I can't get on board. I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead, JG. I wanted your view on it anyway. Go ahead.
For me, you know, I try not to get too deeply into it. I mean, Barrett Brown and I have talked about Assange before. And for me, it's such a huge spider web, the questions around Assange and Snowden. I know people like the famous blogger Tarzi, who are very skeptical of Snowden, and I don't know what to make of any of it. I think Snowden actually did some good work, and I think WikiLeaks did some good work. But in a way, I'm almost agnostic on a lot of the other questions around them. So that's sort of where I stand, just to be honest about it.
No, fair enough. But what do you think about the fact that he's dead silent at this time? And one would think
that's very curious.
Either he would be extremely useful to somebody right now, or he just might have a lot to say if his own projected beliefs in public are actually his own. It seems like a weird time for him to be completely quiet. JG, I mean, so, you know, where in the world is Edward Snowden at this point? You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, do you have any thoughts about it in general outside of it is strange?
I don't want to speculate too much, but to me it is fair very enough. Curious. I hadn't even thought of that until you had brought it up, and then I looked at his Twitter, and there's...
Because I'm a weirdo, like that's why. I'll give you another weird one. We can bounce back and forth since we still got a couple of minutes, and I'll start with you, JG, this time. Is, you know, I don't see anybody trying to talk to Reality Winner either. I don't know.
I do have a take on that one.
Okay, I thought you might. So Reality Winner.
My take on that is that, I mean, I used to talk to Billy. I think you've talked to Billy too, Chuck.
I have.
I almost get the impression that they're trying to, like,
keep her head down
about their lives right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, no. And I think they've been through so much. I'm just happy that family's back together.
No, look, me too. That's why I'm not even bothering them. But I'm just saying I'm surprised somebody isn't really at them trying to get, you know, comments based on, well, gee, this might be relevant to her story in some way or other. I'm just saying. Yeah, go ahead.
Reality Winner was really... her treatment at the hands of the media was pretty odd. Like, there was never a time when, like, reality was a hero. There's never any, you know, it's like, it's almost like the...
Let's
be honest about why she wasn't a hero. And I've said this elsewhere. I mean, this is a girl from, I think she was from Georgia, right? And I mean, her name is Reality Lee Winner. I think there was like a weird classist element going on where the media sort of ignored her. And I'll leave it at that, but I think people can fill in the blanks.
That was during the Obama administration, right? Trump wasn't elected yet.
Well, it started right then. And,
yeah, so, you know, people weren't like really cool. You know, when there was a Democrat in office, people weren't really, and the media wasn't really cool with whistleblowers. Everybody was like burnt out on Snowden and Assange.
I mean, I'll tell you something. I literally took her as a fake news story based on her name. At first, I was like, come on, Reality Winner. I mean, because it's like reality TV show. She's the winner. Yeah, okay. Sure. You know, very much like the story that came out of Georgia about the woman who was sleeping with the, a porpoise or something? I mean, they make fake news stories out of everything in Georgia. So I was saying to myself, come on. But then I dug into the story, and quite frankly, I was like, look, she's being abused under the Espionage Act. This is... absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt as though she was really overly harshly treated by the U.S. government. So, you know, I was definitely on the side of, you know, lay off of her and let her out. I mean, I thought it was absolutely terrible that she spent as long as she did incarcerated, period. So, you know, to me, I thought it was a heroic act to come out with something where, you know, the American people were being lied to, and she paid a heavy price. And I don't think she had any idea what she was getting into. And, you know, speaking to her mom, I was very sympathetic. Definitely interviewed her about it, covered the fact that they put the billboards here in Georgia and all that on this show. Kevin Gastala was on with me. He had written some very good articles about her. But frankly, I'm a little surprised that somebody hasn't tried to enter some of these other people back into the equation. I mean, we got Deripaska and all that back into the equation in the news cycles, right? If you're paying attention. But you don't get some of these other people that could be relevant one way or another or useful to somebody one way or another coming back out. And the very eerie silence from Snowden, I find interesting. And meanwhile, I don't think of him even as a legitimate whistleblower because the majority of what he came out with was stuff that we kind of already knew. For the most part, you know? I mean, Assange is a different story, but I just find it weird that this guy who's, you know, Mr. I got all kinds of things to say while I'm living in Russia has nothing to say right now. And you would think that he would. But anyway, maybe it's just me, guys. And I just thought
I think
we're
all in agreement.
Yeah. Well, I just figured I'd hit you with a couple of weird questions there, things to consider.
Well, you're a weird man, so.
Of course I am.
Hey, Chuck, yes. Is there any way I could get a final comment in before we end? Because there's something I wanted to mention at the beginning of the show that I didn't get to sneak in there.
I'll tell you what. How about you close out the whole thing? Is that fair enough? Joe, you agree to that? We'll let JG close out the whole discussion. JG, the floor is yours, sir.
Well, I just wanted to relay one more thing that I noticed at the D.C. conference I was at, the Transcending the Israel Lobby at Home and Abroad conference, because it actually ties into the Ukraine thing. It was very weird to be at a conference dealing with the struggles of the Middle East in the middle of this Ukraine crisis.
Right.
But I found it very heartening in a way. I know we're talking about failed states and whatnot, but you know, one thing that I found very uplifting over the weekend that I was in D.C. was that you had all these voices from the Middle East. You had Palestinian activists there, and unanimously they were saying, we stand behind the Ukrainians because we know what it's like.
Right.
There was Huwaiti Araf was there, who's now running for Congress in Michigan with the Justice Democrats. Hanan Ashrawi joined from Ramallah. She was digitally there. She voiced support for Ukrainians. And I think for me, that was really touching because, you know, we all bleed red at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I guess regardless of ethnicity, race, color, and the fact that we're living in a filled state or multiple filled states, I think at the ground level, we all know that we're human and we deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. And I think sometimes we may forget that in all the filled state update moments, because things can seem darker than the dark, right? You know, Vanta Black style dark.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of hope because I see a lot of people coming together right now and, you know, using their voice to say what's right.
Well, I'll tell you, from your mouth to every God's ear there is, because I would like to feel as though there is some hope here. I would like to feel as though people recognize the mutually beneficial and you know, negative impacts that can be had here, because we are, you know, very very 1960s of me here, I know, but we are all on the same planet. We're all breathing the same air. And quite frankly, the more we recognize that and understand that we have a lot more in common with each other than we do to argue about, you know, we might actually, I don't know, collectively begin to live on this planet together as opposed to trying to kill each other constantly. And that would be awfully nice. Anyway, JG Michael, Parallax Views Podcast, but also one half of what's going on over at the Failed State Update, Joseph L. Flatley, author, journalist, awesome dude, and weirdo, and also torturer via music. But anyway, you'll hear from that on the Failed State Update jukebox pretty soon. And Michael Swanson in the first hour from WallStreetWindow.com. I thank all of them and you for listening. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started.
WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Ocelli.com.